Welcome to the 29th Annual Executive War College brought to you by The Dark Report. This year's conference was in beautiful New Orleans, April 30th through May 1st. The title of this presentation is Hit Home Runs with Supply Chain Gainsharing and Effective Lab Stewardship Initiatives, New Tools and Analytics to Drive Down Supply Costs and Improve Physicians' Utilization of Lab Tests. The presenter is Lisa Daniel, MLSBB, Director Corporate Lab Services, Parkview Health, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Hi, everybody. I'm Lisa Daniel. You are at the presentation for Home Runs for Supply Chain and Effective Lab Stewardship. So this is the agenda for today. These are my talking points. Raise a hands. Who in the audience has a lab stewardship test utilization program in their facility? Good. The rest of you are just here to learn. So this is a little bit about me. I wanted to start with me. I am the director of corporate lab services at Parkview Health. We are a 14 hospital system, and like most organizations, we are growing by acquiring other locations. We have over 16,000 employees. We employ over 12,000 providers, and we're in 22 counties. So all of the lab services for all those locations are under me. I have been a scientist for 37 years. All my entire career has been at Parkview. I went to school there, got my med tech back then. You know, they've changed our names twice. So I've been there my whole career, so I know a lot of people. The way I got started was probably about, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. I had a hospitalist friend who would come down, and we would chat, and he complained about all the tests that he canceled that other providers had ordered that were not necessary. And so we were just chatting over the COAG machine, and we were just talking about that, and everybody else started chiming in. Phlebots were upset about all the redraws. Scientists were upset because of all of the unnecessary repeats, all the things that they were doing. So I decided to start a little committee. It was me, the hospitalist, a couple managers, including my IS manager. We wanted to start off a little slow. So the first thing we did was look at immunology. We had recently had a situation where a provider ordered electrophoresis every 3 days for like 3 weeks. You know, we had to go in and cancel them. And we had, you know, the providers ordering factor V Leidens multiple times. So we thought, we're going to start easy. We're going to put some time limits in. Epic for that. So we started that. So we got a hold of our IS people. And who in the audience has to put a ticket in for anything you want changed? Okay. So you put a ticket in, you wait for it to get to the top of somebody's queue. Then, lo and behold, there are committees because lab was trying to change something. So then I had this hierarchy of meetings I had to talk to. It was extremely painful, very slow. So I said, there's got to be a better way. So what's the better way? I knew we needed to have high exposure. I needed executive approval. So, you know, everybody's got their elevator speech, right? So I was stalking execs. I was doing my little elevator speech. I pitched my idea to all of these people about a stewardship program. And we, at the time, got a new CQO who was very progressive. So it took about 10 minutes talking to him, and he was ready to go. One thing that I knew is that I couldn't do it on my own. I knew there were a lot of ideas out there. It was very complex. We already had a relationship with Acumen for our patient blood management program. So I hooked up with them. They had a very good program. They have a lot of experts. They knew a lot more about this than I did. So I hooked up with them. We started building a program. So our program right now reports up through the quality board. We have an official charter. We recruited members from all of these different areas, which is one of my things that we're going to talk about later. It's very important to have a diverse group. You have to have very committed, passionate people. It can't be the member on your committee from GI. Cannot be the low man on the totem pole that gets, you know, voluntold. You know, you really want people on this committee that are wanting to do this, because there are expectations of these providers, of these IS managers. So it's really important that you get people that are really committed to this. So the first thing we did, you know, choosing wisely, we all looked at, you know about choosing wisely. We started with obsolete tests and MTHFR. One of the things that we learned early on is you gotta look at these order sets, because, you know, a couple of clicks orders a whole bunch of stuff. And sometimes the providers don't even know what's in that order set. So we started with those, and we made some things disappear. So where it was automatically checked in an order set or available in an order set, these tests just disappeared off of the order set. And for the MTHFR, we had a couple providers that were ordering them pretty exclusively. So we did some, you know, education as really individualized. So this is what, these are our results that we saw. The first one on the left here is that these are the obsolete tests, and over here is the MTHFR orders. So we saved 68, and when I'm going to show you like savings, this is like just lab reagents, and this is not repeats. This is not, you know, wild goose chases by physicians, you know, for, you know, other things. So 68,000 there and 17,000 there. I'm like, okay, we're doing good. Let's keep going. We realized by looking by our first project that order sets were kind of an issue. We realized that when we did our order sets, there was no end date in these order sets. So doctor ordered an admission order set for whatever, and there's morning labs. Those labs went on forever. So we very painstakingly talked to every one of these physicians that owned the order sets, and we got their permission to make those tests 72 hours only. So they had expiration. So after 72 hours, if a provider wanted it again, they had to order it again. And it was extremely successful. And then we went back a year later, and after we were so successful, we went back the second year and went, hey, what do you think about 48 hours? Every one of them, yep, done. So now all of our order sets have a 48-hour expiration. And this is what happened. This is just the first year. This is based on percent of patient days, because, you know, you don't want to do total tests if your volume is going up. So as you can see, we steadily decrease those tests every single month. So these are the reagents we saved just that first year. So this is our 72 hour. Now we didn't redo the data for the 48 hours. So now we're on a roll. Okay, so now we go to C. diff. For C. diff, we had an inkling that our providers were looking for tests of cure. Couldn't really say for sure, but we thought they were. And we knew they were ordering tests, C. diffs, closer together than 7 days, because we were canceling them. And at the time, we had a multiplex GI panel that had C. diff gene in it. So it was a one-stop, you know, one click, and they get all of these things. Well, that's not the way you should do C. diff, and we knew that. So we did a hard stop. So if a doctor tried to order C. diff within 7 days, it wouldn't let them. It just said, nope, not doing it. We also created this ASCID order entry cascade that steered the provider to do the toxin first. And the one thing that we did, and providers in the room, I'm sorry, we removed the C. diff from that panel. You couldn't see it. We did it, but y'all couldn't see it. So we made you use the C. diff that we wanted you to use. What happened? $600,000 savings in the first year. So that was an extremely successful project. It took a long time. And, you know, it was one of those that we didn't hide the C. diff at first, and wasn't that, you know, it wasn't as successful. So we thought, okay, well, we're just going to delete it and see what happens. There were no gnashing of teeth. There were, you know, people weren't in my office hollering at me. It just worked. Another side note from that is our SIR rating went down 81%. So by forcing the pathway to the right way, we improved our publicly reported scores. Okay, everybody had shortages during COVID, right? We were all scrambling. My distribution center calls me and says, we are running out of tubes. We've got 7 days worth. And I almost had a heart attack. So we knew that the IS system had this add-on function, and people knew about it. They were educated. But what we did was we re-educated by a very obnoxious pop-up. And, you know, it irritated the bejeebies out of the doctors, but it worked. We also made the A1C and TSH default to add-ons for inpatients. And because those were our number one add-ons. So our add-ons increased 22%, and we made it through that week without running out of tubes, because it got real scary for a while. This was an interesting case. So I encourage you, I know having vendors come in and do business plans, you know, things with you can be very arduous. This one was very good. There was a send out that some of our providers were using that was extremely expensive. It had a bazillion tests that they could look for, organisms. They came in to show us, you know, their business, how we're doing, and how much money that we're spending on them. And during the conversation, part of this person's spiel was, oh, and 60% of your results come back negative. So, you know, hair is standing up on the back of my neck. So, I know we went back, we pulled the data, and showed it at our lab stewardship meeting. Physicians are very competitive. They don't like their names up there on the naughty list. So this is another reason why you really, really need passionate people on your committee that are willing to have some courageous conversations, because our doctors were like, oh, that's in my group. Okay, I'm going to go talk to him. And we had to do absolutely nothing else but show who was ordering what. And the next month it went down 50%, and we've saved, just in 8 months last year, we saved over $200,000 in that test, that one test alone. This was another example. Just the group, the physicians came up with their own ideas. Iron profile. They were asking us, why do you have two, one with and one without ferritin? Because they are always having to do add-ons. Patient has to come back, blah, blah, blah. So after, you know, discussion of the physicians, my lab staff, we sat there. You guys tell us what you want. We eliminated one of the profiles. And so now we only have a profile with ferritin. That's what they wanted. It's better for patient care, better for us. We don't have to do add-ons. And we don't have patients coming back for a second time. So it was a win-win. We also looked at inpatient hypercoagulation panels. So shouldn't be done during a thrombotic episode, right? So we discouraged greatly the use of these big panels on inpatient side. We made them disappear out of most of the order sets, and it reduced them by 66%. So here's an example of having a diverse group in your committee. This was a great example of why that is so wonderful. The lab staff and the physicians were talking about urine cultures, and the unnecessary ones and all, you know, the contaminated ones. And, you know, I don't do micro, so I'm not that big of an expert. But somebody in our team was working on a CAUTI project they had just started with nursing leadership. We combined efforts. And we, their initiative required a catheter change. It had a very elaborate algorithm to answer questions. Patient had to be symptomatic. We made it almost impossible to add on a culture to a catheter specimen unless you go through this pathway. And this is what happened. So blue is 22, orange is 23, no significant growth. You can see the huge difference there. This is a little wacky, but you can see the trend. So this is contaminated cultures. And here are total inpatient cultures. So you can imagine my micro team going, hallelujah. So yeah, that was very, very successful. And it only made possible because we had somebody from nursing on that team that knew what was going on over here. So having diversity is really, really important. So this was what we, just in the few months that we, in 23, those were plates. You know, that's how much we saved. That has nothing to do with all the downstream. Okay, next thing I'm going to talk about is denials. This came up by my coding people giving me a call and saying, we're seeing a bunch of denials. And it was multiplex testing. For those of you that, you know, in lab, we're not taught payer contracts. We're not taught coding. We're not, you know, we shake tubes for blood bank, you know, we did. So, you know, over my 37 years, I've started learning this stuff. Now that I'm in this role, this has become very, very important in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. So, what did we do? We created alerts to make them stop. It wasn't a hard stop. It was, this is not likely to get paid. You know, try to do, you know, use this. We really discouraged inpatient testing. So, mid-June of this year, we implemented these soft, kind of obnoxious pop-ups. And, you know, you can see, so this is GI, so this is total, and this is outpatient only. The denials were only, you only see denials on outpatient orders, but you want to decrease inpatient orders too. We're thinking, hey, that worked. And here's respiratories. It pretty much followed COVID. We also are getting denials on vitamin Ds. So for vitamin D, the payers in our area pretty much follow Medicare. But when a provider enters the order, there's no ABN. You know, there's nothing that tells them it's not going to get paid, right? We created a pseudo ABN. So when the provider tries to order it, makes them put a diagnosis code in. It wasn't a hard stop, though. They could blow right by it. So this shows outpatient and total. Again, mid-June is when we implemented it. That doesn't look very good, does it? So I pulled the denials again. And look at this. The blue ones are vitamin Ds. Pink ones are respiratory, green are GI. So here's the vitamin Ds, right back up where they started, or pretty close to it. It didn't work. This is an example of something that we did that failed. I wanted to show you not all successes, not everything you do is going to work. So we're back to plan B. So what are we doing now? Well, we're still trying to figure that out. But without a hard stop for those vitamin Ds, I don't know what we're going to do. What we're trying to do now is we've added, and this was very recent, so I don't have any data. We've added the diagnosis codes that Medicare accepts in that obnoxious little pop-up. You know, it'll there's a link that says these codes will work. For the multiplex testing, we now have instruments that have smaller panels that are paid for the most part. We just implemented those about 3 or 4 weeks ago. So I don't have any data yet to show you, but we're hoping with the smaller panels and the added diagnosis codes, we're going to see that turnaround. If not, we're going to try hard stops, and we'll just keep working it. So what else are we doing? And this first thing, you know, when your organization is hardwired into this, when pharmacy is having a leader meeting and they come up with a lab stewardship idea and they call you. So one of the questions that came up during their meeting in February was, we're getting discontinuation orders for these drugs. Are the labs discontinued too? So they're looking at that. They're in the process of pulling all that data for us. We're also going to look at our formulary and test pending a discharge and these kit tests, boutique tests. I could go talk for an hour about that. But, you know, we're struggling with providers and patients, you know, going on Amazon, or the doctors are ordering these kits. And they're coming to our lab draw sites to get collected. Well, we're collecting them, we're spinning them, we're sending them out for no productivity, no revenue, no nothing. And it is exploding in my area. I don't know about where you guys are, but it's exploding. And so me and some physician executives are trying to figure out what to do. And then I put on here anything else, because I'll tell you, you know, these providers, every time we meet, they come up with more ideas. There's not a shortage of things that they come up with. And we just always go with it. You know, we've always got several irons in the fire. What are my lessons learned? First of all, you got to get executive support. You got to get those CMOs. You got to get your quality executives. You've got to get physicians. You've got to get support from the tippy top, because if you don't, you're pushing that boulder up a hill instead of it coming down. Inpatient, ED, and ambulatory. So we started with inpatient, and then we realized we got to have outpatient physicians in this too. Because a lot of the stuff, especially with the denials, you know, you got to get both sides. And they have different perspectives. And so what suits one group won't suit the other. Nursing, IS, compliance, payer contracting, and finance. All of those people need to be at the table. Solicit ideas from everywhere, like, you know, pharmacy. It just popped in their head. Don't forget to collect data as you go. And not everything's going to work. You know, it's just life. Not everything is going to be perfect. You just, okay, that didn't work. Let's try something else. And this is me. Our team won ASCP Choosing Wisely Lab of the Year last year. One of them. So they made me put this picture of me in here. I didn't want to do that. But it's in there. Okay, the other thing I want to talk about was contracting and supply chain management. So in our organization, there is a group of people that do contracting for, you know, the organization. They in our distribution center. Very smart people. They work very hard. They know how to write, you know, they know how to look at contracts. But they are very limited in what the benchmarking and the data that they have. Very limited. So what they think sounds good may not necessarily be all that in a whatever. So we partnered again with Acumen, and because we already had a relationship with them with a couple other projects that have been very successful. And they know labs, and they've got a big benchmark. They know what other people are paying. They know what other people are doing. And so we hooked up with them again. They started looking at our contracts. I got to tell you, it was during COVID. And the first thing that they found was we were like paying buku for our COVID reagents, and we shouldn't have been. So you can imagine how that turned the tide on my finances that month when, you know, we found that out. So it was things like that that we wouldn't have known, our contractors wouldn't have known. So we are doing, we're continuing with them. They're looking at all of our contracts now. They are, as we, you know, every organization, your chemistry is due this year. Next year it'll be hematology. The next year it'll be COAG, right? So, you know, there's always things in the pipeline to look at. So we're continuing that. And this is, over the 5 years of our commitment, this is what we're expecting to save. So the question is, the lab stewardship program allows laboratorians to interact with executives, get exposure, get recognition for the lab, and the question is, how have I seen that, and how has that affected my team? It's been great. I'll tell you, we have so many connections now with executives and physicians and physician leaders that we would not have. I have absolutely no qualm picking up the phone and talking to the CMO or texting the head of the hospitalist and say, hey, this particular doctor did blah, blah, blah. The next day it's over. I mean, it's been fabulous. My IS team, my specialists that I have are on a first name basis with a lot of these people. So it's been great. It's very good to get, you know, most of the labs are in basements, right? You know, it kind of lifts us out of the basement a little bit. So, yeah, it's been good.
Yeah. That was basically going to be the
same question?
Yeah. I mean, you know, instead of just being the people in the basement, I like to say the heroes in the basement.
Yeah, we are. We're basement dwellers. Yep. So the question is my point of care team rolled into this? Not specifically. We pull her in as we can. That is a little bit, that's a great idea though. I think we probably should. Her and I do things offline with how many tests of this are you doing and do you really need 25 people competent every year if you're only doing one every 6 months? Yeah. So we're doing some of that, but that's a very good point. It would be great. Yeah. Yeah. So the question is, how do we approach the physicians if there's resistance to change? Really, really good question. I'll tell you, when we started, again, with Acumen, we had a very good patient blood management program. We had started with, because I had black and blue on my forehead, beating it against the wall, trying to get patient blood management program started. And again, you know, the one thing that I think turned the tide in my organization was we got a new chief quality officer. But we had already started and had those really difficult conversations about blood management. And the organization had seen the benefits of that. So when I pitched this other committee, I knew who I was looking for. And I knew that I needed engaged people that were willing to have those difficult conversations with their peers. And after the patient blood management program was going, I had no problem getting passionate people. So for this particular program, I really haven't had that. I had more of it with the blood management. That was really where the lift was. But this, we have had such engagement by our physicians, the leaders, and they actually want to be on the committee now. So it's really done a 180. But it was hard in the beginning with, you know, because we're lab. We don't usually speak up too much. So, yeah.
How did you communicate change to the physicians? Did it come from the lab? Did it come from the
How do we communicate the changes? We have found, like in every organization, it's really difficult to get physicians to read emails. It's really hard. So we have three methods that we routinely use. Four. We have a news blib, that they put out, email. We have the providers have their own weekly email thing. We have there is a physician manager, office staff, once a week meeting, and we get on that so they can tell the providers. And then we have the providers on the group that actually, we've got a all GI meeting next week. I'll put it on the agenda. So they actually take on some of that too. And if there's not everything goes over like, rainbows and butterflies, but they, if there's pushback, they come back and we talk and pull more data, whatever. But yeah, the members of the group are really active in that too. Yeah.
If I remember your last slide well, you expect to save about $1.3 million on average on reference lab testing.
Yeah.
Each year, what strategies did you use towards that?
Looked at all of our tests and what we were paying and knew what we should be paying. And it was not right. I wouldn't have known. I had no idea. I'm just watching the yeah. We had a contract and it was I'm not finance. I've become a finance guru now, but the contract was signed a couple years ago. Okay, we're just, tootling along, doing our business reviews. Okay, yep, looks good. I don't have background to go, why in the heck are we paying that much money for that? Or this volume, this test has gone up, 100% in the last year. Why can't I get a discount? So, yeah, that's, us are too busy trying to find staff, trying to do CAP or whatever we're doing that, we don't have time to do that. So. It's not our forte. We're scientists and that's not, what we do. So other people that do it better. So. Yeah.
The GI panel, multiplex panels, you said y'all went to a different platform.
Mm-hmm.
And smaller panels.
Yeah.
Did you do it like an algorithm?
We're working on it, yes. Yep.
And if that's negative, you go to the next panel.
Yes.
And if that's negative.
Yes. It's going to depend on the result of the first panel.
Okay.
Not everything on that big panel has treatment implications.
Okay.
So some do, some don't. If you can get, 80% of the information that they need in the smaller panel, that's paid for. That's where you need to start. So yeah, we're still working in. And at this particular moment, GI is not all of them are rowing in the same direction. We've got some new providers, and so we're still kind of getting GI up to speed. But yeah, we're working that. It's going to take us a couple more months, but I think the group is so engaged with this. They know all I have to do is pull the dollars and the numbers and. It'll work. It'll work out. It's just we've got some new providers, and we lost our GI rep on the committee, so we're kind of without a captain in that realm. You're welcome. Yes.
I have the advantage of knowing for Parkview, but data is a crucial source for any successful lab force program. How would you suggest or recommend systems that have disparate systems, it's hard to aggregate data to even go about collecting information to do even half of those projects?
That it's hard. You have to have the data. That's why my lesson learned you know, you've got to have the data. You got to know where you're starting. And, you know, we had, you know, the advantage of, in our organization, we, our system. We have System IS, and as we grow and buy other places, you know, we, one of the first big things we do is try to get them on our EMR and our lab system. If you can't do that, you're going to have to either use an outside source to be able to pull all that data together, or you're going to have to pull it all separately. And what is important is not just the numbers, but who is ordering them, and what are the, you know, the patient types. So it can get really in the weeds, but you got to have that kind of data. You got to be able to tweeze it out. And providers are very competitive. You put them up on the screen, you know, their partner is up on the screen, they're going to take care of it because they don't like to be on our screens. So it just, if you can't do it, you got to help pull the data for you. And that was my biggest struggle in the very beginning. I could not get over that hurdle, you know, with the tickets and the hierarchy of all the committees. And, it was terrible. But once I got a formal charter and a formal committee, now it's like, oh, it's Lisa again. And, you know, I'm still in the, you know, like, I'm not a top priority, but I'm not down here either. So, you know. I've made a little headway. So, anything else? Yeah.
You mentioned new providers. Mm-hmm. Do you have any type of orientation with
providers? Oh, thank you for bringing that up. The hospitalist friend of mine is now in charge of our, we just, maybe a year ago, got started a residency program, and he hits them right off the bat with test utilization and patient blood management. As soon as I knew he got this promotion, I called him up. I'm Stanley, tell me you're doing orientation. He goes, I already wrote it. So yeah, but they are, but the residents that are hired directly in, yeah, no. So that's where having a friend that's in charge of the hospitalists or the intensivists. I call them up, you know, Dr. Sorg, you know, my phlebots are saying blah, 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 I pulled it, this is what's going on. It's taken care of the next day. So, yeah, that's really good because we see shotgunning quite a bit, you know, in the new residents, and we can tell when there's a new batch, you know, and so I just got to pick up the phone now and say, hey, tell them to knock it off. So, and doctors count clicks. If you make it hard for them to find something, it's still there. They just got to go search for it. They won't do it. If it's a few more clicks, it'll discourage them from looking. So that whole, you know, if we hide things like those obsolete tests, we didn't take them away. We just disappeared them off the order sets. Still there. They have to go look for them. Yeah, they won't do it. Yes, how many COVID tests did you guys bill during COVID? You know, well, we were still getting a lot of the multiplexes ordered because, I mean, they type in COVID and it was one of the top ones, right? So one of the things that we had to do was go back and get rid of all the junk, but rename things. So naming conventions is important. And that iron profile thing. You know, we had, it wasn't clear from the titles that one had ferritin and one didn't. And so, it was just confusing. You know, legacy names from 30 years ago. So naming stuff is important. And there you get your providers to tell you what they want it called. I mean, lab, we don't care. Tell us what you want it to be called, what, you know, where you'll look for it. Yes.
Another question for you. So these days we're all worried about lab acquisitions, losing your laboratory.
Yeah.
Do you think at some point in the past that was ever a conversation at Parkview? Fast forward, now that you've got laboratory stewardship in place,
mm-hmm.
How do you think that dynamic changes and demonstrates the value of your laboratory?
Yeah, that's a very good question. it is always possible that they can sell a lab. They, you know, executives think we're commodities, unfortunately. By showing the value of this, being engaged, being front and center with executives and CMOs, it really does lessen that chance, because you're showing value. You're making improvements. You are very engaged with quality and nursing and IS. You're not in the lab, in the basement, the unknowns. So it does help. All right. Thank you, everybody. If you have any questions.
This concludes the presentation. Please visit the Executive War College website for details on the 2025 event.